Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, I'm very glad to be back. I had a good time last Tuesday night. I was very grateful to you for giving me to go away like that. But it was a treat. It's another little piece of my world that I don't get to experience very often. And it was very fun. But I'm very glad to be back. I realized, having done that, gone away and spent an evening out, that I'm not up to doing that yet. I was completely demolished the whole next day and a half. So, as I told Samia, I think I'll have to wait a few more weeks before I can come down and spend an evening with you. But I'm aiming on it, and everything is getting better and better. So, fear not, I'm on my way. It's just going to take a little longer. So we're getting to the end of the Diamond Sutra, and I hope you all are thinking about what to do next, because it goes quickly toward the end. And I wanted to remind you somewhat of, since we keep dropping it and picking it up so many times, of the kind of flow of it. So when a couple of weekends ago, the women who went to Japan spent the night, we had a pajama party here, and Blanche Hartman was with us, of course. And I said I was studying the Diamond Sutra with everyone, and she said, "Well, please, if you understand what it's all about, you should tell me." If Blanche Hartman can say such a thing, well, don't fret. Just let it pass, flow through. It does have a direction, you could say, and the direction is exactly the same as the Heart Sutra, which is, as I always say, like a big eraser, saying no, 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 no this, no that, no up and down, no back and forth, no. It's all in order to divest us of our attachment to anything. It's attachment itself. It's not that we want things. It's not our big desires. It's not our badness or our goodness that we're trying to root out or polish up or improve in some way. But just to free ourselves from our eagerness to hold on tight to things and try to keep things from moving when everything is moving all the time. And it means giving up our own self, our own fancy story about ourselves. We don't give up ourselves. There's no way. But we do... we can see that that's the self that we creates this clinging, the self that creates the sorting things out according to our own particular benefit, is a fake. It's not real. It's not there. It's just an idea. So that's what this is about. Basically, we have all these names for things, And all through the Diamond Sutra, it keeps disabusing us of our attachment to the name of one thing or another, especially the Tathagata itself. So Subhuti starts out being interested in how the Buddha was living his ordinary life and wondering how that could be anything special and spiritual. And thought he was just about done. And Buddha started telling him about the Bodhisattva way and about understanding the Bodhisattva way before anything else can be accomplished. So believing that the Dharmas are real or that a Bodhisattva is a real thing is already being off the mark. As soon as somebody says, well, I'm a Bodhisattva, that's just totally not true. The only way to be a Bodhisattva is not to be thinking about such things at all. Bodhisattva is not a person or a being or a soul, as it says, or a self. A Bodhisattva is a force in the world. And we ourselves are a force in the world. We are life itself. And as we live and practice and dedicate our life, it becomes Bodhisattva force. But it's not us. And so what Buddha says is in the end, what's real is selflessness. And that's what makes Subhuti cry. He is suddenly very moved that, oh yes, it's not about me. It's about the whole thing. When you drop the self, it isn't that everything disappears, it's that everything comes to life. So then they go on, having dealt with attachment to the self. This whole last half of it is about attachment to the teaching. And as you remember, the attachment to the Tathagata is, of course, a big piece of that. And so they say, no beginning is the highest. No transformation. When a Bodhisattva resolves on selfless dharmas as selfless dharmas, the Tathagata pronounces that person a fearless Bodhisattva. So truth is, it takes a lot of courage to live like this, as they're describing it. That fearlessness requires a tremendous amount of courage to really live like that. So then they pass through the eyes and the merit, all the different eyes of Buddha, the Prajna eye, the Buddha eye, the Nirmanakaya eye, the plain old-fashioned real human eye. Buddha has them all, and the Bodhisattva achieves them through practice. They talk about the physical bodies and its attributes. No attributes. All the attributes of the Buddha. The gold body, and curly hair, and the light in the middle of the floor, all those things are not the attributes of Buddha. So Buddha keeps bringing up, or Buddha keeps bringing up one thing after another, as if Subhuti has these ideas about what it is. What is this tathagata? What is this practice? Do we rescue beings? Well, Buddha says there are no beings to rescue. Are there auspicious dharmas? Well, the only auspicious dharmas are no dharmas. It sounds, if you look at the whole picture of it, it sounds very negative. And yet the truth is, it's the most positive thing of all. It means whatever we create in our mind, the inside of our mind, we could say, we have to say it's just a thought. It's an impression. And in all the studies they're doing about the human mind now, there's some very interesting things coming out about how we sort the things that we notice and remember. And mostly what we notice and remember, unless we're very awake, is things that we already know. So we see the color red and we say, oh yeah, that's red. And unless there's something really unusual, we don't even notice it. So that a sleepy mind can go all the way through a whole life without ever really learning anything, waking up to and being real with itself, living the life of it, the flow of it, the force of it. So although this seems very ancient and strange, it's really not nearly as ancient and strange as these new neurological studies that are going on about the human brain. They're really amazing. And this completely reflects what they're discovering. The Dharma itself, the human mind, has been studied in Zazen for thousands of years. So, this next one is number 27. It's very short. And maybe we should read it. It's chapter 27, not cut off from life. Because that's the most important point about this no business. But it sounds like we're then slicing life off and going off into some kind of other world. And that is not what Buddha means. This is not cutting off life. Would somebody read?
Subhuti, what do you think? Was it due to the possession of attributes that the Tathagata realized unexcelled perfect enlightenment? Is that what the one that we're supposed to be studying?
Yes.
Sounds awfully familiar.
Well,
you should hold no such view, and why not? Subhuti, it could not have been due to the possession of attributes that the Tathagata realized unexcelled perfect enlightenment. Furthermore, Subhuti, someone may claim those who set forth on the Bodhisattva path announce the destruction or the end of some dharma. Subhuti, you should hold no such view. And why not? Those who set forth on the Bodhisattva path do not announce the destruction or the end of any dharma.
The reason it sounds familiar is because in the chapter before this, The Buddha asks Subhuti if the Tathagata can be seen by means of the possession of attributes.
Right.
And Subhuti says no. The Tathagata can't be seen by means of possession of attributes. And Buddha says, well done. So this is saying, did he, because of his attributes, realize enlightenment? And he says, no, it couldn't be done by the possession of attributes that he realized enlightenment. In fact, you would think that, of course, he would, the attributes would come after, enlightenment first and attributes after, if attributes were important at all. Those who set forth on the Bodhisattva path do not announce the destruction or the end of any dharma, and that's the most important point of this. That this isn't about cutting yourself off in practice from your own life, the life of Buddha, and the life of the Sangha. That there's nothing to cut off. There's actually no place to go. There's no other place. So attributes aren't being Buddha. Attributes are the practice itself. Our practice is our Buddha-ness. And that looks ordinary, even though it's not. So Chao Ning calls this nothing ended, nothing destroyed. And Tao Chan says, if the enlightenment realized by the Tathagata was not the result of merit, then the merit cultivated by a bodhisattva, then does the merit cultivated by a bodhisattva not form the seed of enlightenment? To eliminate this doubt, the Buddha says the Tathagata does not realize enlightenment because of his perfect attributes. His perfect attributes are the attributes of merit. Thus, in cultivating the seed of merit, or in realizing the fruit of merit, the Mahayana not only remains unattached to attributes, it also does not base itself on the Hinayana view of their annihilation and destruction. Thus, in regard to dharmas, the Buddha says attributes are not destroyed or cut off. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, when we look at a table, a flower, or the highest, most fulfilled, awakened mind, if we see that they exist independently of other objects of mind, we are caught in the view of permanence. On the other hand, if we think that everything is non-existent, we're caught in the view of annihilation. The middle way taught by the Buddha is a way free of these two views. Liberation is not to cut ourselves off from life or to try to reach non-being. I think that's a very succinct description of this. And a very succinct description, really, of the sutra. how we define that middle way is different every moment. And I always think it's kind of a drunken stagger between one side and the other, sometimes more toward the annihilation side and sometimes more toward the fancy spiritual side. But the important point is just to keep finding ourselves back on our seat, just where we are, flowing with the whole world as the world goes and we go, and not be attached to any of it. So, are there questions?
Angie, you said that you can't destroy the Dharma because there's nowhere else to go. So, if you stop practicing, can you stop the practice? You can stop the practice. So
you think stopping practice is destroying the Dharma?
Well, for yourself.
Well, then you have to know what yourself is.
Perhaps you have an erroneous idea of yourself, and so you aren't aware of the Dharma, but you're still in the Dharma.
Always. Samya?
Did Buddha explore other... I mean, he made up the practice, right? He kind of came up with it.
Oh, no, I think it went on in some... There was meditation long before that.
Okay. So, and then here we are doing our thing every week, you know, sesshins and this and that. And... I feel what's really strong is when somebody experiences something and feels it's the truth, and therefore it becomes the gospel. So we all run around walking in slow, you know, hin and doing this, and because somebody did that and it works.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that somebody. It's like... I guess I keep asking the same questions every year in a different variation. Shouldn't we be going out and like stepping out? I'm not saying that we're in a box, but I feel for us to be authentic, it should be our thing, my practice, rather than...
Well, that's the same as Wendy's question.
It is?
I mean, who is my, me?
Right, right. That's true. But we are, I mean, yes, we are kind of similar, but we all have our different way of understanding, and, I mean, we are very different.
And if we cultivate those differences and... And we misunderstand how the world works, what Sangha is. So we practice Sangha in a group.
Yes.
We don't always practice Sangha when we stand up and go home.
That's true.
Then we have our own life and way.
Right.
But when we come together, for one thing, it makes it easy for everybody.
Yes.
But that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that we are practicing together as a body. Our own body is a part of a much larger body, and we recognize and live that as Sangha.
So it's a balance.
It's a balance, and it's very hard for Americans to be comfortable with that because we're so individualistic. We just want to make ourselves only, each one the only one. And of course we are. But that's not the only truth of it. And there's a much, much bigger truth of how utterly connected we are with everything. And we embody that as a Sangha. And if we sit together for a number of days, we feel like we're all breathing together.
It must be right because we keep coming back. Nobody's leading us with them.
Yeah.
That thing on the net. Just checking in.
Keep asking.
I'm sure I will.
Well, believe it or not, it's 8 o'clock. Be well.
Thank you.
You too.
Good night.
Good night.